Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. The cessation of nearly everything in the city of Detroit is making for serious consequences in the city's business community and finances. Detroit is still dealing with the problems of its bankruptcy, and several deadlines are looming. At the same time, there's a great deal of will to get as many people as possible back to work, providing essential services and, this term feels new, essential manufacturing. Daniel House is a business columnist for the Detroit News, and he's been following these issues and more. He joins us now. Daniel, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
All right. Let's take a look at one of the biggest developments. You wrote this week about the federal government's new contract with General Motors, paying $489 million for GM to make ventilators for the national stockpile. Can you remind us the Defense Production Act, what it is and why it was used in this case?
The Defense Production Act dates back to the Korean War, and it essentially empowers the president to order certain industries within the United States to produce products that can be used towards a war effort. As all of your listeners know, the president and others have likened the fight against COVID-19 to a war. And the president was getting a lot of pressure from governors around the country saying, why are you not invoking this? And the president wasn't. And he was getting increasing amounts of pressure. And at the same time, General Motors was and a partner called Ventec Life System out of Washington State were negotiating amongst themselves, but more importantly with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to build more ventilators. They would be Ventec's ventilators, but they would be built by General Motors, and General Motors would use its scale of scaling production to up massively increase production of these products. And the president a couple of weeks ago finally invoked it against General Motors, much to the puzzlement, I think, of GM, because they were already well down the road and FEMA knew they were well down the road towards doing this. Nevertheless, he invoked it and ordered them to build these things, and they ultimately got the contract. Now, that's the top line. That's what you see on the outside. On the inside, General Motors was doing this anyway. I've talked to a senior executive who was familiar with the situation and asked him, what is this invoking, this contract invoking of DPA really mean to what you're doing with Ventec? And he said, absolutely nothing.
So what it means is that the ventilators will go to the stockpile more than anything else, right?
Correct.
Under other circumstances, GM might be able to sell them to whomever they chose.
And well, sort of. But what's really interesting and going on behind the scenes, and in fact, I have a couple reporters that are working on this as we speak. There's a whole patchwork of relationships, supply relationships, sometimes personal relationships. As you get these companies like Ford and General Motors and Fiat Chrysler in a plant in China and Lear Corporation in a plant in North Carolina and others who are manufacturing various things for PPE, masks, gowns, face shields, how they get to hospital groups is all a jumble. Sometimes it goes, there's a commission that's facilitated by the state. Sometimes it goes there. Sometimes there are General Motors executives who are actually going to Michigan hospitals and personally delivering face masks. It's part of a program, a volunteer program that GM has. There's all sorts of different ways that this stuff is getting to the hospitals. There's not one central federal system. There's not one central state system. There's not even a local system. There's a whole patchwork of things.
How big a contract is General Motors' deal for the ventilators in the context of the car-making work that GM is not doing right now?
Small potatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to remember when we talk about, what was it, $450 million or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
General Motors is doing this all for cost. I mean, there's no profitability in this at all, and they're moving and they've been moving procedurally in ways they've done more in a couple of weeks than they would have done in a couple of years had they tried to do this in normal business. And they wouldn't try to do this in normal business. They wouldn't try to build ventilators. Why would they do that? But they're doing it because they do have the expertise, they have the supply chain, and they have the engineering prowess. I think it's at times like this that people who have lived in and around the auto industry but really don't appreciate the scale and the technical competence where they can really show these things off. The stuff they're able to do in a short period of time is pretty remarkable.
You've referred to this move by the automakers. We've also got Ford making 50,000 simple ventilators in a partnership with GE. You've referred to this as the arsenal of health. There are many other companies working on face shields, sanitizer. Do you see Michigan living into that role in the arsenal of health, given the specific challenges that we have just in terms of COVID infections?
I do. I've said to a couple of people at these companies as I've reported this out over the last, three weeks, this doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that these companies are rising to the challenge. I've covered a lot of these executives. I've known a lot of them for more than 20 years. We've kind of all grown up together in the business. This is kind of part of the DNA of companies like General Motors and Ford particularly. They were companies that formed the bedrock of what Franklin Roosevelt called the arsenal of democracy. They changed their production to making tanks, to making trucks with Chrysler, and Ford famously involved with making B-24 bombers out at Willow Run. That project had been headed by Edsel Ford in a lot of ways, and some people think that it's ultimately what contributed to the health that, that put him in an early grave in, I think, 1943. So this is part of the DNA of this part of the country, to rally around something like this. Mary Barr, the CEO of GM, was said to her team at one point, you know, every day we waste is another life at risk. We have to do this. And so the fact that they're doing this at the same time that their business is basically frozen and the meter is running, because remember, when these companies are not producing product, the meter is running and they're just burning cash, and they burn cash, and it's a daily and weekly burn that goes on. So they can't do this forever. But they're still producing the stuff, and they're not even close to reaching full production.
There's been criticism that Mary Barra gets different treatment from President Trump because she is a woman heading an automaker. Do you think there's merit to that?
Short answer, yes. Mm. But I also think that he respects her, and he thinks that she knows what she's doing. He plays an interesting game with some of these CEOs. He will take them on publicly. And GM in this whole DPA contract that we talked about earlier is a classic example. My wife said on that Friday when he came out and basically denounced them from the podium and put down Mary over Twitter, that night she told my daughter, she said, our daughter, she said, I haven't heard your father scream that loud in a long time. I was so furious at this treatment because we knew what was going on. We knew what they were doing. GM had been prepared to announce all of this stuff, and at the request of FEMA on a Wednesday, they did not announce what they were doing with Ventec, their commitments to go ahead and produce. They did it at the behest of the government, and then the president comes out and goes to Twitter and uses the podium in the press room to denounce GM and the people at GM. There's always a problem with the people at GM. There's always this and there's always that, and they should be building in Lordstown, but they don't even own Lordstown anymore. It's owned by another company. It was just all this stuff and noise. And then by Sunday, he's saying, oh, they're doing a great job. It's like, what is this all about? And I think in some ways it's a political pressure valve. He's getting all this pressure from the governors about invoking the DPA. He pulls it out against GM when he didn't really need to do it. You could say he could do it with other companies, but he didn't need to do it with GM, and he did it anyway. So they go through this whole roller coaster, and a lot of the media that don't cover this with the same degree of closeness that we do, they just pay attention to what the president says, right?
Yeah.
It's not what's going on really behind the scenes that's being reflected in the story.
Dan, coming out of Detroit, Mayor Mike Duggan says the coronavirus outbreak is not just costing lives, but the viability of the state of Michigan. He's estimating that COVID could set the city back in a $100 million hole. Is there any way for the city to absorb that kind of body blow?
They're going to have to. I know that sounds kind of callous, but that's the environment they're in. Remember, Detroit came out of bankruptcy. It had a plan that it has to adhere to, a financial plan, and it has a Financial Review Commission that still has oversight over its budget. And if they run a deficit, they could lose control of their budget. It's just cold, hard reality. There's nothing in their bankruptcy exit plan that accounts for a COVID-19 outbreak.
Or other acts of God.
Or other acts of God, exactly. So, I mean, he's already said, look, we're going to spend what we need to spend to take care of our people. But we project that we're going to have a $100 million deficit on a budget of over $1 billion. You know, he's talking about furloughs. He's talking about other kinds of actions. And he's got a pretty good track record of dealing with this kind of stuff. But it is a pretty harsh reality. And I think the bigger question, it's not just about the city budget. It's what kind of snapback do we have in the city? It's been billions of dollars of investment, lots of small businesses. We had Dan Gilbert's family of companies, Bedrock, their real estate arm, essentially forgiving rent for 3 months, I believe, in a lot of small businesses and bars and restaurants downtown. And I think the question is, do you get a snapback? I mean, I think we probably, those of us that are living through this, probably know that when we start to, quote, get back to normal, that's going to be a process. It's not going to be a destination, right? So you're not all going to go out to bars. You're going to say, yeah, I don't think I need to do that. Or you're going to pick your shots. Or are you going to go to restaurants? You know, maybe you go to this restaurant, but you won't go to that one. You know, you won't go to a movie theater. I mean, all this kind of stuff, we don't know how that's all going to play out. And all that's going to have economic impact on whether you're in the suburbs or you're in the city of Detroit.
Daniel House writes and edits stories about business for the Detroit News. Daniel, thank you.
You bet.